Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Passes the waiting flight, OOH153, that's flight OOH153. Please approach the gates. Your flight is not ready for boarding.
You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast.
You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast.
You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast. Featuring Kieran, Kwame, Yas, and Stephen.
You London boys are crazy.
Areti.
Whoever messes up is going to jail.
It'll probably be you.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Waste, man. Are we live, yeah?
Yeah, fully live.
We're up and running.
Oh, snap.
We're up and running.
All right, well, this is a bit of a unique episode today.
It is, isn't it?
It's been a long time coming, though, I feel. Yeah. It's been on the cards for a minute.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So normally, lovely listeners, if you can hear the voices of myself and Kwame, you recognise those voices. We're normally joined by the elegant Kieran.
Yeah.
With those dulcet tones. And the maverick.
Oh, wow, nice. I was about to say eccentric.
That is Stephen Apampa. Shouts out to both of them. In the building today, we have myself, Yaf.
Yes.
Got Killer Kwams.
Hello.
AKA Papi Kwams.
Live from Amsterdam.
And we have a very, 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 very special guest. Called Miles O'Mealy. Miles.
Hello, guys. Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the show,
pleasure
my brother.
To be here.
We, as you said, it's been a long time coming.
For real.
So we're gassed to have you on the show. We're going to talk about everything. We'll kind of get into your journey and who you are and what you do. Normally on these episodes we go into like what made us smile. And that's a bit of like a level set to sort of just
like take stock and give thanks, isn't it?
Yeah.
We do a lot of like, oh, my week yeah, and sometimes yeah. Like no there was yeah. This in it, like, so
yeah. So before asking that, I'm just going to quickly ask Kwame.
Oh, yeah, nice.
What are we listening to today, my friend?
Thank you, a few downs. You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast, where, oh, wow, a network of four Londoners that met in Amsterdam that share stories of their own and dope stories of others. And, so we usually do this from Amsterdam and London. Today is Amsterdam, and we're very excited about getting into this. This is what we call, I guess, an in-house session, Out of Home. You see what we did there?
Vibes.
And we're very excited about this, and we're going to get into it. Miles, do you mind going first to like set the pace, or you can let me and Yaf go with your first, with the moment, what made you smile?
Let me go in the middle.
Okay. I'm going to kick it off because I wasn't able to do it just recently. sounds kind of weird, but I'm going to go straight. We all know about algorithms, right?
Yeah.
Instagram, Twitter.
Where's this guy?
And like,
where are we going?
Spotify, here? LinkedIn, all this stuff. Like, so sometimes I've been really grateful to Spotify when you listen to one of your artists, then like you're doing something in the background, then you're like, rah, what is this song? Then you click and you like. That's what I'm up about on a different level. So, me and my missus, we had a dog, but she passed away earlier this year. So we're really animal people. A lot of time we're sending each other YouTube clips of dogs or what have you. So Instagram's like, all right, this guy, we know he's on like dogs and all that. But Instagram has now started to like tease me with content with like bunnies and otters. And I'm like,
otters?
Yeah, bro. There's people that have in America or wherever have otters in their house. These otters are like chill in the living room, but when they're in the bathroom, they're frolicking. So, anyways, long story short, the algorithm has somehow deep that this guy might be susceptible to this kind of content, and I am. So, so it's just a couple of times I'll go through my Instagram reels or whatever, there might be like NBA clip, a football clip, like a streetwear clip, then there's just a bunny or just like an otter. I'm like, yep, like. So the algorithm has got me down. So yeah, shout out to your people, but it's working. So that's what made me smile, because like, just like random things. And
yeah.
I think a lot of times we think about, oh yeah, this and that. And you see, like, life is just so, life can be so simple, isn't it, bro?
For sure.
I'm a grown man, I think I'm smart. But it's like, I'm laughing at this, otter in the bathtub somewhere in Minnesota.
How would you describe what an otter is to people? Because some people might not even know what otter is.
That is a good one. It's like a sea.
Yes.
It's like a water bear. Like a small water seal slash bear.
Yes. Almost like
a furry seal.
Yes. Almost like in the same cousin as like a squirrel with less of a bushy tail but a lot longer.
And bigger and fatter.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's
a big squirrel. It's more like a baby, like a tiny seal.
Yes.
With
we have international audience, so a lot of people will listen to this from the UK. Kind of like a meerkat. But that someone that is prone to... Meerkats aren't prone to water, right?
No.
There we go.
But they're fatter than meerkats. Yeah. Otters are quite... They're a little bit wide.
Yeah, because after... Yeah, no, we're really going in, isn't it? So if anyone from National Geographic looking for some content creators, you know to holler at. But Miles, I want to ask you now, made you smile in the last seven...
I think our algorithms are quite similar.
Yeah, really?
On the dog pet front.
Okay,
And the problem with these algorithms, the moment you like just one, then it sucks you in. So definitely,
I
can't remember one in particular, but I've definitely laughed at a few pet things for sure, especially dog things, because I do love dogs. But I think like the most recent thing is like Messi. I mean, I'm not an Argentina fan, mm-hmm. but I want Messi to like cement the GOAT status over Ronaldo, to be honest.
Yeah.
So like seeing them get to the final, I was happy at that for sure. That's dope.
So this is obviously being recorded this week before the World Cup final. So we'll listen to this, we're gonna see.
Yeah.
Oh, people will know what happened. But
I'm also
pro Messi. I think a lot of times we're tribal in life. People are like comparing, it's like, no. We'll just be happy that this man at 35 is doing a madness, isn't it? Like he's producing art on the pitch.
Yeah,
so
yeah, still doing this.
But you know what's interesting with that, Like football players now I'm seeing have way more longevity than they used to.
Yeah.
So like we're seeing players before, as soon as you touch 30, 31, 32, it's like you're on the way out sort of thing. But now you look at Thiago Silva's, 39?
Baller.
Zlatan's
Zlatan. Modric.
LeBron's still dunking at 37.
But this is because, like, the knowledge of the game and the human body and the recovery technology, all these kind of things. It's just better now.
And I'm curious to see what that's going to do for the next generation of players. Like, are they going to stop playing at 40? You know what I mean?
Maybe after someone at 35, you're like, yes, we've still got a good 5 years in them.
Do you know what I mean?
And that's
more money for those athletes to make as well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, for the economy, it's a madness.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. I'm curious to see what's where that's going to go. to address what made me smile / laugh this week, it's so stupid, bro. Everyone who knows me knows that I'm a pretty, I'm serious when it's time to be serious.
Yeah.
I can mess around when it's time to mess around. But something happened today that just completely made me absolutely laugh, bro. You guys can both see the stairs in my lovely girlfriend's apartment. How would you describe these stairs, gentlemen?
Steep.
Yes.
Very steep.
Almost like a death trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Almost like a ladder.
Basically like a ladder with like Miles said, like very like steep steps.
Yeah.
It's funny you said death trap because trap in Dutch is stairs.
It's
crazy.
Yeah,
you know what they call a staircase? A trappenhouse.
That's a great name, isn't it? That's a great name.
Anyway, I wake up first thing this morning and my missus is cooking breakfast and she says, can you bring down the extension lead that's upstairs?
Dangerous. That already sounds dangerous.
So I'm like, cool, I've come down the stairs with one item because I use my hand to guide me down the stairs, innit? It's like a ladder, as you said.
Yeah.
So I've got the extension lead in one hand. But then as I'm going, I see she's prepared her gym bag and she's got boxing gloves in her bag. And I'm like, this girl really thinks she's about this boxing life. So if you've seen her if you've seen her Instagram, she'll post like videos of her doing her boxing workout and stuff. So I always take the piss out of her.
You openly mock them still.
I mock them openly. So I'm like, going gym with the boxing gloves. Yeah, all right, cool. So for some reason, something told me to put on one of these boxing gloves. So I've got boxing glove on one hand, extension lead on the other. So I'm going down, I'm like about to go down the stairs with no hands, basically, which is a risk. I've done it before, but it's risky. So I've got my slippers on, so I've gone like... I'm in reverse mode, basically, So I've gone down, missed a step completely.
First one.
First step, bro. I've missed it. And I start falling down the stairs from the top of the stairs, bro.
Yeah.
But obviously, I've got this extension lead on one hand, so I'm like trying to hold. But then I've got a boxing glove on the other, so I've got no grip. Bro, I had an almighty crash, bro. I came down here, bumped into the bin, knocked over this thing.
So basically,
and that was the start to my day, bro.
What you got, a TKO before like round one began?
On entrance into the ring.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Into the ring.
Your opponent would have got a lot of confidence from that one still. Yeah.
But the funny thing to me is, like, again, I'm serious, so I need to be serious. I need to mess around. But, like, I had a call, like, a pretty important business call, like, 10 minutes later.
Yeah,
and I'm jumping on this call. Yeah. And I said to myself, if only you guys knew, if only you guys knew what had happened 10 minutes prior to this call, fam. So that's what's been making me smile, what made me laugh today. And was just a reminder that we can't take life too seriously.
No, you gotta trust me.
Fuck around, take the rough with the smooth. And especially in a time like now, man, it's dark.
Mm.
It's like, yeah, man, I found myself just watching bare comedies lately. Mm-hmm.
See it through.
Like, to just entertain myself and keep myself switching off from all the seriousness of work. Do you know what I mean? So, that was our quick round of what's been making you smile. This episode ain't about us, though, Miles, it's about you. So before we even kind of, like, dive into your story and who you are, how would you define what you do, who you are? Like, obviously people know you from around the way, but if you do your research on Miles, you'll see he's a man of many talents.
Many. A few.
So we don't want to put you in any sort of box, bro. We'd like you to sort of, like, introduce yourself almost.
Yeah. How did this... I mean, like... Yeah, I guess, like... Formerly would be like a design engineer, like as my craft, as my trade, if you like. But now, like, just more wider than that, broader than that, just like a multifaceted creative, and just wanting to, like, really combine, like, work and life into one. But yeah, like, what we do, it's definitely it's a product creation studio, but we always have, like, a very open approach to what it is that we create and where, and the fields that we work in. So, you know, like you said, like, when you search me, it's kind of not, there's not one individual thing that comes out, and that kind of reflects in the studio and our work and our team. It's really, like, to be creative, but always be open-minded in that approach. So it's not one thing, really. It's not one thing.
Sorry, I just...
Cool.
Go back in?
Yeah. All good.
That sounds good. I feel like... there's been a lot of change in the industry that you work in.
Sure.
And, sure. You know, you mentioned the team, you mentioned we. How would you define your business? What's the name of your business?
Yeah.
I know we was having a chat, like, how to pronounce it, where does it come from? So it would be great to kind of, get that oversight from you as well.
So, yeah, the company, Areti, and Areti basically is a Greek word. And this Greek word means fulfillment of purpose, fulfillment of function. And it's like a singular word which, you know, you can live your life by. And it's how you approach your life and your day-to-day with Areti. So if you're a chef, how you approach cooking. If you're a footballer, how you approach your sport. Or if just your day-to-day and your relationship, you know, like having purpose and real focus in achieving fulfillment in your day-to-day. And that's what Areti means, and it's why I chose that word, to honest with you, because for me it's very important that you have fulfillment and you have purpose. That's what drives you, you know, like from a day to day. If you wake up and you have a real purpose and a real drive, then of course you're going to get up and achieve. And because for me, I never wanted, like, when I was younger, I remember very clearly, like, it was like, there's no way I ever wanted to wake up and be like, fuck, I got to go to work today. I never wanted to have that feeling. You wake up and be like, fuck, really? I got to go to work today. I never want that feeling. So fulfillment of purpose is something that really, really resonates very closely with me. And that's, if you Google the word, it breaks it down a lot further than that. And we actually can build our business philosophies and principles off the meaning of Areti. And then the team aspect, obviously, is very important, man. Team aspect to me is crucial. Because, nothing, you can't achieve anything individually, you know, and, like, all the visions and the dreams that I may have can only be achieved if the team also believes in those two, adds to them as well. So not only my vision and my aspirations, it's also the team's added in that too. So that's why I refer to we all the time, because yeah, it's by far just me. It's like the whole team for sure.
Nice. And I wanted to ask, like, obviously you work in, like, you know, branding and design, so you know, you can have a great like product, but when it's got a name,
for sure,
it kind of has that little extra edge, and you can get excited about it. And obviously, the way you speak about it was quite like polished and patterned. But were you like struggling for a long time to find the name? And then when you found it, was it like a eureka moment, or did you kind of stumble on it per se?
No, it definitely took a long time to find the name for sure. Because it's funny, because something that doesn't really matter, but at the same time,
you
know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not it doesn't not really that deep.
Yeah.
It doesn't, especially for me, because it's not a brand. It's not like my it's not a brand that I'm gonna sell a Reti product.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like consumer facing, so to speak.
One day I will do it. That can happen. I could see it happening, but yeah, it's not consumer facing from the get go. But obviously, so that's why it was more important to me that it meant something, like it had a hidden meaning.
Yeah,
that was more important to me. So yeah, but then when I stumbled across it, it wasn't a eureka moment, because what Areti meant was like, damn, like that is literally what I want to achieve for my life.
Yeah,
you know,
you spoke about the sort of the team aspect, and you also mentioned like fulfillment of purpose. If we go all the way back, not all the way back, like from when he was born, but what's the context? Like, what do we need to know about your life and what's happened to you to sort of have this sort of perspective?
Random question. I'm all about first when we have guests. Whereabouts in the UK are you from?
Birmingham.
Oh, I think you are first. Birmingham. Yeah.
Birmingham.
Whereabouts?
Originally Handsworth, but now Redditch. My parents live in Redditch, which is just south of Birmingham.
Yeah. Shout out to the Brummies. I don't think I've heard of Brummie before. No, I don't think so. Well, even if we don't, we're going to say it's our first ever right now.
Nah, yeah, you're right. You're a Villa fan as well, innit?
Villa fan, yeah. Aston Villa.
There's a lot of talent in Birmingham, you know, in football.
There is.
There's what? There's obviously Jude Bellingham.
Jack, young boy playing now.
Yeah.
Jacob Ramsey.
Yeah.
Jacob Ramsey.
Decent.
Ramsey's a baller.
Baller. He's
ready.
Baller.
Very composed.
He'll be in the next. He'll be. Maybe the Euros, but definitely next World Cup.
21, Ramsey?
Something like that. Yeah.
He's playing last year and he looked like he belonged, didn't he?
Yeah. Slapping in goals, bro, against big bad boy teams.
Yeah.
But no, so born and raised in Brum, but...
Yeah, what was your first, like...
I think for me, the biggest impact on my mindset was sport, was playing sport to a high level, to be honest. Has to be this. But I play tennis to like a high level when I was a kid.
Didn't you know this?
No.
Yeah, random, hella random. But yeah,
fun fact about Miles.
Yeah, like I was a top 25 in the country under 16.
What was your game?
17.
Were you baseline? Were you serving volley?
I was like one of my biggest idols. I mean, idols are strong. I don't really use the word idols, but yeah, I admired his style of play for sure. It was like Leighton Hewitt.
Oh yeah,
you know this guy was like tenacious. He had aggression,
fiery
as hell, you know, and like just could he would like I will be out on this court for as long as I need to win this game.
He was intense, isn't it?
He was hella intense.
A lot of players will complain because players will like double fault, and he'll celebrate like he won the point, innit?
He was just a fierce competitor. Fierce competitor, and like didn't really have any like super strong weapons.
Just good at a lot of things.
Consistent, good at a lot of things. And so, yeah, I really liked the way that he played. So, I kind of modeled my game a little bit off the way he played in terms of his tenaciousness and competitiveness, and also just I also didn't have many weapons. I was a small kid, so I didn't have much power and stuff. So I was more of like a baseliner and just hang it and just I'd be just fitter than my opponent, you know. But yeah, just that when you play sport to a high level, it's like goal setting and the discipline that you need. You know, like you set down milestones, you train every day, you know what is required to have success, you know, and like so many of the principles in high level sport are just as applicable.
Oh, they're so transferable, bro.
Crazy. Like, they're so transferable, it's man. It's like one-on-one, you just transfer across. And even my coach, when I was like from 13, I had the coach who was with me until I was like 20, until I was like 19, 20. And he remember early on, he was like, look, you know, let's be honest about this. Like less than 1% of kids go pro, make it to a level where you make enough money. It's your job, basically. Yeah, yeah, less than 1%, about 1%, you know.
Because even a lot of the pros are struggling, isn't
it? A lot of pros, especially in tennis, because like you have to be like top 150 in the world to be making enough money for that to be your income.
Yeah.
Mm. Everything after 150 to 300, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
I'm probably, you know, but... Yeah, you're not earning like the Federer kind of anywhere near. Yeah. And after 300 in the world, forget it. Like you need sponsors. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So he was like, you know, let's be honest, you know, 1% make it, you know. So I don't know if you know. Let's if you will.
The pragmatic approach.
Yeah, but the mindset and the skills that you learn and will adapt over the next 10 years or so will set you up for life as well. You know. So definitely sport. Sport's been a big part.
I totally agree, and it's something that we've spoken about a lot on the pod. But even with just like friends and stuff that have played sport and are now either have their own business or are working in a corporate environment, and just say like the impact of sport, like you're more extroverted, you're more team oriented, you know, you can connect with different types of people. So it's really this transferable thing that I don't think is spoken about enough, to be honest.
Really, it's really, no. I mean, it's no coincidence, and there are a lot of, like, even if you didn't make it pro, there's a lot of high-performing athletes and sportsmen and women that go on to have success in the business and their personal life. But because it is so, even like failure and mistakes and like things like this, man, like...
Those are such beautiful concepts.
Honestly, like, you know how many times, like... You don't succeed at something when you play sports or a high level, or you
especially
have,
in tennis, where
you
like
have, you have failure. You know,
every rally that there's something that could be critiqued. Essentially,
and tennis is unique because it's a very individual sport.
It's a very very individual sport, massively. Like when you win, obviously it's all on you, and that's amazing. But when you lose, there's no one else to blame.
Yeah.
There's no one else to blame. It's just you and on you. So, for me, it's like definitely one of the biggest things is like when you play sports to a high level is how to like. Ride through failure and losses and things when they don't go your way, because in business that happens all the time, you know. And how you ride through that and just continue on and dust yourself down, and it's really like looking at things objectively and why did that not work, like you review the matches that you lost and you break that down and you go back to the training and work on the things that you didn't, that you, the reason why you lost, you know. Same in business, you know. Why did that not work? Okay, you review that with your team. Okay, how can we improve? You know, in team sports like football, we didn't score enough goals last season. Right, let's go out and sign a new striker. You know, same in business. Like, okay, we didn't quite have that in our roster, in our mindset. Right, I need to hire someone who will help me achieve that, you know, and then give them the complete, just create the environment, the ecosystem for them to thrive and do what you've hired them to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, simple as that.
I think oftentimes in sport, you have athletes who are performing at top level, but they don't necessarily know at this moment of their careers that they can apply this mindset to something else.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, there are so many smart athletes out there who people have no idea. This person's hella intelligent. Sure. And I feel like there's an opportunity there in the sense of athletes being a bit more diverse in the business world, because a lot of the time it's after career, post career, or you know, you reference your coach saying 1% of people make it. So I mean, me, I play semi-pro football. I knew I was never going to make it to the prem, so at 19, similar age to you, I was like, all right, let me see what else is out there. Do you feel like you always had a knack for business, or was it something that you had to kind of learn on the spot?
Definitely not, because like I didn't even consider like I didn't consider anything other than tennis till I was like 19.
So mad how we think, isn't it?
Like, no, nothing. Like, I wasn't even going to go to, I went to uni after going pro for like 9 months, and I was like, this is nuts. Men's tennis, this is nuts. I'm probably gonna need another 4 or 5 years of training to, anyway. Yeah, it's just nah. So then I was like, that's when I then considered other options at 19, 20.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even then, it wasn't considered that thoroughly. I basically went to Sheffield Hallam because two of my friends from Birmingham were at that uni. And I was like, cool, I can live with them for a couple of years.
Shout out to the homies.
Have some fun.
What course did you do?
I did a course called sports technology. So I was also like, okay, what do I like?
Yeah.
When I was at school, I really liked graphic design, product design, like anything design, building orientated, I really liked. And obviously, I love sport. So I just Hallam because my two of my friends were there. And then, all right, what courses do they have? And I didn't really have the best grades. Mm. So I couldn't, you know, go. I had to also pick certain courses, and sports technology was just the one, really. So that's where I went to uni. And that's when I was like, okay, started to think about how I could make a career, like, within sports still, but on the product side, which I've always been interested in still.
Yeah. And then from your degree, because obviously we all met you out here.
Yeah.
That company we'll speak about. Yeah. But were there any like steps in between?
Yeah, for sure, because that sports technology degree wasn't that great, to be honest with you. To be honest.
Shout out to everyone.
Yeah.
Trust me. You will make it.
Hey, what's the shopping centre in Sheffield called again?
Meadow Hall, man.
Oh, my days. Yeah, yeah. I've graced Meadow Hall a couple of times.
I even worked in that shopping centre. Yeah. I worked in office. Remember the sneaker store office?
Yeah, of course.
I did the Christmas stint where they needed more people.
The temp situation.
Yeah. They didn't ask me back. Really? They didn't ask me back. They didn't put me there. They said, ciao, see you later afterwards. Like, damn. Harsh.
That's quite demoralizing.
Yeah, man. I didn't even get kept at the office. I was like, yo, that's wild. Yeah, so I went there for like 3 months. But no, the course, because the problem was that was the first, I was the first round of students in that course. Mm. So they were basically still figuring out how to make this course a thing. So the first few years was just basically, they were piecing together modules from other courses to build my course. So it was like a bit of a trial period.
Very DIY.
A bit of a trial period. So when I finished that course, I was like, I'm never gonna get the kind of job that I want with this course. Plus I had a 2-1. So I was kinda like, that's most people get 2-1s. It's a good grade, but a lot of people get 2-1s, right? So you're kind of in that pot with a lot of people. So then I looked at masters and I did a masters in at Loughborough, which is where I really like. That's where I really.
That's a really sporting.
That was but they also like a very very good university for engineering too. I did a master's in design engineering, and that was when like I really then was like when I really hit it.
You had a bit that, between your teeth.
Then, yeah, that was the first time. That was the first time in my life I ever like knuckled down educationally. Yeah. To be honest. Yeah.
But that's because you tapped into the word you used earlier, like your purpose, and you knew what you was interested.
Yeah, I really found something that like. Fuck, this is really me, man. I love design, but I also geek out over engineering. Mm. And this course is everything that, and it's at like a high level.
And how old are you at this point?
I was 21 or 2. 22. No, I was 22.
That's crazy.
I was 22.
Because I feel like there's a lot of kids now, even in like when you're 14, 15, you have to choose your options that you're going to study your higher grades, your GCSEs. Then you feel like there's pressure to choose the topics in college.
Man. It's very early. That's a very young age. At 14, right? 15, I can tell you, I did half days at school for training.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking anything about that.
It's crazy. You're taught we're pressured to figure our futures out. We haven't even like figured our lives out.
Nah, exactly. Yeah.
People to your friends that are like changing team like willy nilly, innit? Yeah. I can change my hopes and dreams.
Nah. Right, man.
It's too young. It's too young for sure.
So you're 21, 22.
I'm 22.
Doing your masters.
Because I finished at 23. So 22 to 20. It's a 1 year masters. 22, 23.
Yeah.
And what did you? How does it even work a master? Do you just get your master's or do you get a grade?
No, yeah, you study your master's for a year, then you then you do your final project is like dissertation, they call it, where it's a master's project. So for me, I did protective equipment, but 3D model. This is like early on in like 3D printing, 3D modeling. It's like, 10 years ago now? Yeah. So I did 3D modeled and printed protective equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So like I did football shin guards specifically. Like had a phone app, took a picture of my friend's leg and basically then modeled some 3 or 4 different shin guard designs and then printed them and then we tested them playing matches and doing training. That was my project and I got a dissertation for this.
Oh wow, amazing.
So then from this then was how I got the job at Nike.
Before we go into the Nike stuff, I'm curious to know, because you say 22, doing this master's, you really tapped into your passion and what it is you're interested in. Where do you think, like, I'm trying to understand the context, like, where do you think, or why do you think this was your passion? Like, what do you think it was that you experienced in your life or you did that just made you super interested in this? Because the reason I'm asking is most kids growing up, they don't even know that there's careers in in this passion of yours. So I'm curious to know, like, what was it about
that? I also didn't know that there was a career in design engineering. I didn't know there was such thing as like a footwear developer. I didn't know. Even when I finished my master's, I was like, no idea what kind of job I'm going to get.
Wow,
I had no idea what kind of job I was going to get. But yeah, the sport, obviously, that sport is obvious why I was into sport. Obviously, my dad was he was a better runner than I was a tennis player. He was like a very, very good runner, very high level runner, 800 meters, had Olympic trials. Like, I met a couple of his coaches when I was playing tennis. Because I played a tournament at his old academy, and his coach was still coaching there. His record is still
His
record was still on the board as number one at the academy, and his coach was there, and he was like, "Yeah, I don't know how your dad He was Ovett, Steve Ovett, that era, and he's like, I don't know how he didn't, you know, because he was competing with those guys. I don't know how he didn't go as far as those guys. He used to say to me." So obviously I had that as a driving force, and my dad was like, push me hard. And then my mom was like, she was creative. She likes art and that kind of stuff, but she was a school teacher. So design and creativity wasn't her job, but that was like a hobby. Those are her hobbies, you know? So I guess it came from that, but I'm not really sure where the engineering and the creative side come from. There's no clear connection.
I guess it could be connected to some sort of curiosity that you have. It's like, how do things work? How are things put together?
I mean, when I was younger growing up, for sure, I was always very fascinated by like building things and taking things apart and that kind of stuff. That was from a young age, I was interested in that. And my sister, she's also very creative, very, very talented as well. So there's obviously something in the blood.
Something in the DNA
that is like creative, you know, revolves around creativity, because she's very creative and very headstrong, but in a completely different field. But still, the principles required to do that job well are the same, you know?
Yeah. So you've graduated now, you've done a master's, got a first in your master, in your dissertation, then what happens?
The Nike opportunity came, and I wasn't even going to apply, you know, because it was like footwear developer, and I'd never done anything on footwear. Never. So I was like, I'm not going to, and my lecturer...
Based in Neverland, based here, right?
Yeah, based here. And my lecturer was like, so you should still apply. And I was like, yeah, but I've not done one footwear. I've not done nothing on footwear. I knew nothing about footwear. So he was like, no, you should still apply. So I applied, went through the three rounds of... interview, like, you know how it is, and yeah, I got the job.
I have a question. Yeah, I'm always curious to know, like, how did you find out about the job?
On LinkedIn. Wild on LinkedIn. I didn't even find it. My lecturer was like, yo, look at this LinkedIn job advert, you should apply. And I was like, no, I'm not gonna apply, it's footwear. I've not done anything on footwear, and it's Nike footwear too. It's not like a small brand footwear. It's Nike footwear, you know? And like us guys growing up, like London, Birmingham, like Nike's like the holy grail. It's like a mecca of like sportswear. How are you going to get a job at Nike from fucking Birmingham? Mad without studying footwear.
What was your...
And you're probably thinking, like, my shin pads are hard, isn't
it? For real, it was like, it was a cool project, you know, that ain't going to go anywhere.
How was your LinkedIn game back then?
I don't know how I remember, but probably weak as well. Probably hella weak.
But then, like, did you, like, send them a lot of the projects you worked on?
Yeah. I made, like, a little portfolio as well, which, again, probably was a bit weak, but, yeah. I mean, it was more like you do more talking at that stage rather than showing, because I wasn't applying for a design position where you need a design portfolio, that kind of stuff.
I'm
applying for a developer position, so it's more how you think, how you talk, how you problem solve. problem solving as a high level sportsman as well. Like problem solving is a big one
in business as well.
Business as well. Yeah. So,
like, even in tennis, like, oh, this guy's back.
Exactly. Analyzing.
Weak ass forehand.
Analyzing constantly. Constantly.
This joke, man.
Analyzing. Yeah. So it's more like that in the interviews for sure.
Knowing Nike, they must have been so gassed that you was a former tennis, or still at that
of
point,
course,
like a tennis player.
Of course, they love
Nike
that shit.
Nike love
they
it.
They love that shit. That's what I tell everyone who like who asked me for advice on Nike, hey, mention your sport. Like, did you play sport
facts.
To a good level? If they say yes, talk about it. Mm. Talk about it a lot and like talk about the skills that you developed through it and the achievements that you had, all this kind of stuff. Talk about it, because they love that shit.
And it's funny because like when you're on campus at Nike, everyone claims to be ex-pro footballer, ex-semi-pro footballer. You get on the pitch and you're like, are you sure, bro?
For real.
So, okay, so you do those three rounds?
I did the three rounds. The last round was in Hilversum.
In person?
Last round was in person.
Those old days when you could just go somewhere. Because that was similar with yours in your old company, right? You came to Amsterdam to have the interview. These days it would have just been a Zoom team, but that's mad.
They flew me out for the last one, and I pulled up in a suit, man. It was so it was so bad because my dad, you know.
If I gave you job means they were riding for you. There was some side eyes like,
100%. After like when I came back to start, my boss and my team told me like, yo, like when you pulled up in that
it's
suit,
it's a big thing, isn't
it? Yeah, we were like not sure if you were the right guy, you know, like
details,
you pulled out the bag with the way you spoke because the way you pulled up wasn't correct.
Were you wearing like the full shebang or like a suit and Nike shoes?
Shoes. I just didn't have the blazer and the tie. But it was my dad, like old school Jamaican guy, interview. What do you mean you're gonna wear a suit? Like there's no way you go to an in his mind, there's That's no way crazy. You pull up to an interview. Not in a suit. And I was like, Dad, it's Nike. I don't need to wear a suit. And he would not let me leave the house.
That is so funny.
Suit. And I was I at least compromised and allowed me to not pull up, not wear the tie and the blazer.
Yeah, the tie could have. You know what's crazy? Because I had this thing. I missed my interview for my job because I missed my flight.
Okay.
Because I was for some reason fantasizing on an edit. Yeah. Spent too long, what's the word, fantasizing about this chicken guacamole and bacon bagel, which is not a real thing. But I was like, it's a Friday, I missed my interview, and not because of my interview talents, because someone turned up, they could have got it. Link back to yours, just because of your outfit, if the next person wore a wavy tracksuit, they might have been like, Miles is cool, but that tracksuit was hard, isn't it?
For real.
As we're learning the details. Sport and design, like look at France and England, like,
small details.
Is crazy,
small
isn't it?
Small details.
And at Nike as well, like for context, anyone who's listening, Nike is such a... There's such a specific culture associated to Nike. So even just pulling up in a suit, people can look at you and think like, maybe this person isn't the right fit.
You don't get it.
To say the best thing, they have the best record, isn't it?
Nice.
But no, okay.
Stiff.
So you managed to escape like suit gate. How long? And so I'm guessing, were you working in Hilversum and living in Amsterdam?
Living in Amsterdam, working in Hilversum, Did that for 2 years.
Okay, and then you really went out of home.
Then I really went out of home. Then I went to Vietnam. Yeah, that was wild. That was 26.
So you've done the Netherlands for 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that must have been a crazy culture shock. Because did you move from Birmingham?
I was working for my old internship company for when I graduated from my master's, just for a bit of cash. So I was actually living in Nottingham at the time.
Sure, so you never actually done London then?
No, I never lived in London. I never lived in London.
Wow.
So you came from like Redditch to Nottingham to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, I spent some time in the north because of my uni, so in Loughborough. So I was Sheffield, Nottingham, Chesterfield, these areas for like
Chesterfield
for like,
Kevin Davis,
for like for like for like. Yeah, man.
Legendary FA Cup run in that.
I had some friends who played for Chesterfield as well. So I was like there for like 4 or 5 years. And then obviously it was always in and out of Birmingham a lot too. But I barely even visited London during my time in the UK. So then I moved from Birmingham/Nottingham to Amsterdam.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. What was that transition in terms of, like, Birmingham boy? You've gone from, like, Redditch to Rembrandt Square real quick. Like, what was the transition for you, like?
It was cool, man. Honestly, it was cool. Like, I actually very quickly felt like, wow, this is my place, man.
Yeah.
This is my place. Like, the mixed, like, well, just the amount of creativity that was in your face, very visible. Mm. And also, like, because we're all, like, multifaceted, you know? Mm. Like, you know, like you said earlier, like, you can joke and have a good time and you know when to be, like, serious and turn up, you know? And, like, that's the same for me, like, you know, you can have, like, nice little glass of red wine and then on the weekend you can turn up, you know? But kind of like in Birmingham or the UK, like, you can't really be both those people, you know?
It's one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one or the other. Mm. And here, like, I don't know.
Is he a ladder or is he a fancy pants?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to lie, like, wow. I'm a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of both. I can be bougie, but I can also just be, like, a proper lad and, like, just be easy as fuck. Not care, be really easy. So I can be both. And that goes across the board, I can be both. And at Amsterdam, you know, I just felt like, here you can be both, man. Like, it's very open-minded. There's a lot of creativity. It's very multicultural. And it's such a small city as well. Like, it's just so accessible. And it's just, like, you're in it.
It's
concentration
amazing,
of everything. Like, the creativity, the multifacetedness, the diversity, the entrepreneurship. It's amazing. I felt at home quite quickly.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think you, when did you come to
2014?
Okay, so you were here a year before me.
Yeah.
I remember, like, when I first started, like, meeting you and, like, the rest of the gang, it was, like, the infancy of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're working for Nike, so
yeah.
I remember I was like, no, like, these guys have just the energy.
Yeah.
They're doing things, innit? Like, I was on the other side, so it seemed a bit like...
that's really interesting, though, because... A lot of people sort of see the brands that you just mentioned, even what you're doing now, Miles, as the finished articles. But you were, like, you guys were in Amsterdam almost like this golden era of creativity, entrepreneurship, people just, like, going after what they want to do. Like, how did that feel, bro? Because I can just imagine.
It was amazing.
That must have been the sickest feeling ever.
It was
ever.
Amazing, man. Like, to just be around those boys. Obviously, like, I always tell people, like, I'm adopted by Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. Like, it's my home city. It's my base. You know, I travel a lot, but it's my base. And I'm fully adopted by the city. And I think after month six, like, I met Hussein at a party. And he basically then was like, I've seen you. I was with Matt and I was with Kevin. And it's like, I've seen you boys around, like, last few months. Like, what do you guys do and stuff? And then we obviously introduced and then went from there to not the old FP office, the office before that on the, I think it was on the Kaiserkrat. Just, like, walked into Guillaume's office and was like, bro, what the fuck? This guy is the same age as me, 23, 24. And he had this wavy office. Brand filling pieces.
Shouts out to
Guillaume. It was like, poof, so sick, so inspiring to see. Hussein, Jeff, Abda, Olaf, you know, all the boys, you know. Just doing bits, black, mixed, doing bits, you know. And like when my dad came as well, he was like mad proud, you know, because for him, that immigrant generation,
we, Jamaica
to the UK, black had a negative connotation.
Facts.
You know, like trouble with the police, womanizer, yeah. Dad's not around, you know, like crime, all this shit. Had a black connotation to him, and he was trying to escape that, and he in sport was his escape, you know. So when he came and he saw like the crew, and he visited the stores, he visited the offices, and he comes every like a few years and he sees the progression, he's just like, right, this is nuts. So sick, man, to be around like such positive black energy.
Yeah.
And for me, when I was young, like 24, 25, being around those boys, it was just like, yeah, was really, really inspiring for sure.
Can you imagine like a film?
Oh, bro. Keep going.
Can you imagine a film made of that era of just like everyone on their come up, the like, but from the business side and to the nights out and
your four like leading companies like actual businesses which employ people. I was gonna say like now obviously HBO Max, Netflix, the best writers can make a film, but I guess for you the magic would have been those early moments.
Like you don't like now with there's so much pressure on all of us like there's so much pressure. Now, back then, you didn't have that pressure, man. Yeah. You're just young.
Just like an adventure.
A bit naive to it all. You're just on this crazy ride, this crazy journey with your boys. We was in Jimmy Woo every weekend.
Oh, you know? Like, Jimmy Woo!
Like partying, Bitterzoo. Every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we're out. Monday to Friday, we're grinding.
I love
young,
that.
Just on the hustle, but just loving life. You know, now you're older and you've got additional pressures and... You know, like, it's serious now where we're at. It's serious, especially for the DPFB guys and the rest of them. It's serious now, the level that they're at. And I'm making my steps too, and I'm working with big brands. Serious now, the level where we're at. So back then, it's good days, man. Really good days because...
The smile on your face says it all, my brother.
It's really good days just because, you know, like... Around so much positivity, and it's we're working at Nike and meeting. That's when we all met as well, and just everyone that I met during those first 2 years was just positive energy.
Yeah, I feel like everyone who moves from the UK to the Netherlands, Amsterdam specifically, they're just kind of taken over almost by the magic of what Amsterdam offers, and it's like as you said, it's so inspirational. People so creative, so open. And so collaborative, and I think that's the magic of what Amsterdam is, and it inspires you, man.
There's a real togetherness,
big time.
We spoke about branding earlier, but like Amsterdam really isn't a city in it, bro. It's a village. In terms of size, it's a village with the cultural importance of a city.
Because externally, the rest of the world, Amsterdam's on the map, which is also. Yeah. You know, it's a tiny city, but to have the global presence that it has,
it's amazing. Everything.
Everywhere you go, you say, I live in Amsterdam, it's like,
everyone has a story or a positive thing.
For real. No one
dislikes Amsterdam.
No.
You know?
No.
So you've lived an incredible 2 years in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
How do we then transition to the next phase of what's going to happen in your career?
So, I was part of this, you remember the WPC, the Western Europe Product Creation Team. I was part of that team. And then around, I guess, 2015, 16, something like that, the leaders in Portland closed down all of the regional product creation centers.
Yeah, I remember
this. They shut them all down.
It's ironic because then Joel opened up a few years later.
Not even years, bro. Like 9 months later, they reopened it and just renamed it.
Crazy.
Because they realized they fucked up, basically. Because they closed that, and because I've been at Nike for only 2 years, it was like impossible I would get a visa to go to Portland. And I had two very good managers, Fra and Fabio, shout out, and they were like, "We can't let this kid like leave Nike."
I'm taking it. You were smashing it then.
I was just enjoying what I was doing. So I was hungry.
That's a beautiful feeling.
I was just enjoying it, man. So I was just getting after it, and also like just. Like I always, not always do, but just like thinking about it in a different way. Like I just wasn't approaching it in the regular way. I was just approaching it in my way, my job, and enjoying just trying to push a little bit the boundaries of what my job normally entitled me to be doing. So, and I think just I had two very good managers that just obviously saw that and were like wanting to give me an opportunity. They made Vietnam more. At first it was China. Then it was Vietnam. They made basically the opportunity for me to go to Asia and have interviews for Asia. And Yeah, and it was because I was like, I was the my position at Nike was more, it was too junior normally for an expat position in Vietnam.
I guess he was a specialist.
Say again,
he was doing a specialist role here.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, I mean, here I was a footwear developer, but I was like a developer one. And normally that's the titles, you know, associate dev one, dev two, all these bullshit titles. Yeah, yeah. But I was a dev one, and normally to have an expat contract in Asia, Vietnam, China, wherever it may be, Indonesia, you need to be dev two. And they managed to pull some strings, and I was like one of the first, I think I might have even been the first dev one at Nike. To get that kind of opportunity. So they managed to pull some strings that make it happen for me. So that's how I got. And of course, I'm like, of course, let's fucking go. Are you mad? This was a crazy opportunity.
You say that though, but there's a lot of people that would be like,
yeah,
too far.
I've also always been one who's like enjoyed being out of their comfort zone, to be honest with you.
I love that.
You know what I mean? I've always liked that. And so I wasn't really fearful of it.
It's not a normal thing though. There's a lot of people that refuse to come out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, but I think that's such a shame. It's like, how do you grow? How do you make mistakes? How do you evolve? How do you develop? You know, like, it's impossible. I mean, I use this phrase every time I get interviewed or whatever, but like Muhammad Ali had this quote, and it's lived by me from day one. And it's, he can be also she who is not courageous enough to take risks will accomplish nothing in life. Right, so it's like you need to step out your comfort zone, man. You need to take risks. And that's not the reason why, like, I took that job in Vietnam, because it wasn't like a conscious decision. It's just naturally how I.
It's your approach to life, isn't it?
Yeah, how I approach. So I was excited by it, but also daunted. It was daunting. And when I flew, I actually cried the whole flight to Vietnam. Man.
Swear down.
I cried the whole flight. I couldn't stop crying.
Where did you fly from?
From Amsterdam.
Right. Okay. Did you have a send off?
I did. Yeah. I think Matt came. Who else? I think who else came? Ozzy came. A few of the boys came. I think Hussein came. Yeah. A few of the boys came. But nice. I didn't start crying then. I was on the plane, but that's when it hit me, because up until that moment, I didn't really like acknowledge what was happening. I just was like, you know, like excited by it all and everything. It's going to be cool. Saw the contract, you know, driver, house paid for, all this kind of...
At 25?
26.
26?
All this, like, cool shit, you know?
Mad.
Just like, right, I'm going to move to Vietnam. I'm going to live in, like, a 5-star hotel. I'm going to have a gym, swimming pool, driver. This is going to be sick, you know? Then it hit me when I was on the plane. And obviously, we talked on the 2 years I was here, and they were amazing 2 years. So much fun. Met all the boys. And it just hit me, like... And I'm moving to the other side of the world, man. This is a 15-hour flight. And
it's a long time to think about what you're going to, isn't it?
Even like, I didn't want to leave. I really didn't want to leave. It was too soon to leave. I didn't want to leave. So I cried the whole way, man. I was like, fuck. Yeah. But I don't regret it at all. It was sick.
How was that for you? I mean, yeah, how was Vietnam for you? Like,
Vietnam was like, there were some days where I was like so homesick. Yeah. I'm like, what am I doing here? Really, what? Because culturally, Asia's wild, man. Culturally, it's so different. English, Jamaican, I'm more like, I'm more European, British, African, Caribbean culture.
Yeah.
You know, Asian culture is so different. But it was amazing, man. It was fucking sick.
Whereabouts in Vietnam?
Saigon.
Okay.
Saigon. Okay. And like, I got a scooter pretty early. I shouldn't have done it. It was in my contract, but fuck that. How are you gonna
in
get
the contract to not?
Yeah, man. Because the insurance, would have been wild to get. But it's like, how do you move around that kind of city without a scooter? So, day one I got a scooter. Yeah. As soon as I touched down, a friend put me in touch with Min. This kid saved me, man. Cause
shout out to Min.
Shout out to Min, big time. Because Berlin, German Vietnamese guy, and a friend of mine. Flo, he put me in touch with him, and he was out there on an internship from his uni, and he basically plugged me in, like,
so important, man.
As close, I mean, there isn't anything out there back then, especially, that we are comfortable with in terms of culture, community, the scene, music, fashion.
Yeah.
It's not like what we're used to. But as close as I could get to that, he plugged me into that from day one, and he got me a scooter, introduced me to his crew and everything. And yeah, and then for the first 6 months, like, I was with him a lot. So I was cruising around the city, like, the stimulation, mad. And I was traveling Asia a lot. I went to every, Yeah, everywhere in Asia, man. Like, everywhere. Like, name a place and I've probably been there, you know? Like, everywhere. So, over the 3 years. And obviously, within my job, I learned like, a crazy amount, man. I was every day in the factory, you know? Like, as an engineer, like, who likes engineering.
Yeah.
Geeks out over that shit. So, I was, like, pushing what I was on a three-year contract. And I was meant to only do one category while I was there.
Yeah.
After the first year, I was like, this is boring, man. Like,
you can do more.
I want to do more. I'm in Vietnam. I'm in the factories. We do every category of product here. Why are you not letting me touch other stuff? And again, I had, again, shout out. I had a Korean boss, Jin Hoon. And he, like...
Shout out to Jin Hoon.
He listened to me and was like, all right, okay, let me get you other jobs. And he's the one who got me the Off-White collab.
Really?
Yeah. He didn't have a clue what he just gave me.
Really?
He had no idea what Off-White was, man. He gave me... There were three shoes from Virgil's R.I.P. Shout out to Virgil, man.
Every time, man.
There were three shoes from the 10 that were made in Vietnam. And Jin Hoon gave me that project.
It was the Vaporfly, the Hyperdunk, and the 97, right?
Exactly, yeah. You remember from my office. Nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what opened up my eyes to what I'm doing now, basically.
Yeah, because you're working with a lot of, like,
high fashion streetwear, luxury streetwear. Yeah. That's what opened up my eyes to, like, setting up what I've set up now.
So then, okay, so when the 10 launches, are you still in Vietnam? Or?
Yeah, I'm still there, yeah.
And then, like, the world's going crazy over it, and you're nuts, like, this is me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
how does that feel, like?
It's amazing, man. Obviously, no one knew it was me.
And you can't really be like, sorry, Virgil.
No, but it wasn't even like that because obviously, like, I'm in the factory to execute their ideas, you know? Yeah. And, like, I'm in between him and the Nike team and the factory. So I'm there to I contributed on, like, the construction, which I guess, yeah, is a major part of those shoes, you know? But, yeah, no, it was sick, for sure. And like I said, it opened up my eyes and my thinking to, like, what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Before we go into the technical side, what do you think is the thing that you learned the most from Asian culture?
You know what? Like, how humble and nice
it's ridiculous.
The people are, man. Like, it's ridiculous. I wasn't super close with the other Nike expats that worked in Vietnam office because they're primarily from Portland. They're quite, you know, like 10 years older than me, at least. They're there with their families. They're white.
It's a bit different, isn't
it? It's just different people, man. We don't really have a lot in common. So I didn't really, when I went to work, I didn't really... I communicated with them for work purposes, but not, like, in a jokey way, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You never vibed with anyone.
I didn't vibe with anyone, no, for sure not. And in the factory, so my people at work were the factory workers. I vibed with those guys, man. They were funny, man. They were funny, good guys. Loved to drink whiskey.
Really?
Like, got me smashed so many times. And I can hold my whiskey, so they had mad respect for me. They were like, yo, Mars is sick. And those guys, their knowledge is wild. And they work so hard and they're just mad humble, man.
Bruv, the humility is the thing that I can't put my finger on. Like, where does it come from?
The humility is nuts. They're just... The respect, their approach to, like, work, the focus that they have. Yeah, so just, I mean, that for sure, man. That for sure, like, to be humble, man. And to really be humble, like, not really... I just really gravitated massively towards, and even the Nike colleagues that I was closest to were the Asian Nike colleagues. So the Thai guys, the Vietnamese guys, the South Korean guys. I was much closer to either the Nike guys from Asia or the factory workers. Their humbleness and just really good people, man.
And did you ever get to travel to one of your colleagues' countries or link up with them in like a Bangkok or a Seoul?
I didn't with my colleagues. But I went to all those countries friends that are from there and living there. So in the 3 years I was there, I built up a really good network around Asia, like from Tokyo to Seoul to Bangkok to Hong Kong Manila.
When did you come back to Europe?
The end of 18, start of 19.
Okay, yeah.
The end of 18, start of 19, yeah.
But even what you just said, your network around Asia, that's not something that many people can say they have, especially someone from originally from Birmingham to say they now have this crazy network all over Asia is a resource.
I mean, obviously, like, COVID kind of has made that difficult to keep that as strong as it was over those 3 years. I've got a lot of, like, you know, like, reconnecting to do, let's say, for sure. But, yeah, during those 3 years, for sure. And like, still, like, my really close friends, like, you know, we still chat and we still have each other. But, yeah, for sure. It's also one of the reasons why I was confident to try to leave, because I knew the unique position I was at, like, the intersection of all these different things. Both in my way that I thought, but just in my network from Asia to the from the east to the west.
That's what I wanted to touch on now. So you're 29 at this point?
When I left, I was 29, yeah. 29 when I left and moved back. So I moved 26, so it was 3 years, 26 to 29.
So you've been in Nike for 5 years, give
just
or take.
Just over five, yeah. Just five, give or take, yeah.
You're working at arguably the biggest sports brand. Well, by facts, the biggest sports brand in the world. You've just worked on the 10. What gives you the feeling that you need to now move on? Because, you know, we worked at Nike for a long time. Saw people with 20, 25-year careers, 30-year careers. What was it that you was like, nah, 5 years is good. I'm ready to move and do my own thing now.
I mean, it wasn't like a plan from the beginning at all, for sure. And like, it kind of really came into my mind the last like year and a half while I was in Asia. Just because like when I worked on that, the 10, also I worked on like football boots. I did one of the boots that was for the World Cup.
Sick.
I just running shoes, performance, lifestyle. I did a lot. So it's like that really, you know, opened my eyes up to being able to touch different areas. And obviously then seeing my friendship group here, the boys at the brands here, seeing them grow their brands and having success. And then also like seeing how footwear developers in Asia and I went to Portland for 2 weeks, WHQ, seeing how footwear developers work. And just realizing like, yo, I work nothing like that.
Yeah, you had something special.
Nothing like that, you know? So I knew I thought differently, I worked differently, I had a different mind, a different approach. And I tried to find somewhere in the company that would fit that, you know, this kind of multifaceted approach that I had. I liked design, I liked the marketing side, I liked the storytelling, I liked obviously the product, but I'm a geek for engineering still, you know, like that's, end of the day, that's kind of my foundation. So like, where can I be that I touch these things? It doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist in Nike, you know, it just simply doesn't exist. And it's not a problem. I mean, the company is big as Nike, it can't exist. You need everyone that does their individual.
It needs to be siloed, right?
It needs to be siloed. It needs to be structured. You can't have someone that touches a bit of everything. It would be a mess if everyone was doing that, you know, in such a big company. So I get it, but then it's not for me. And then I've got to build that if I want to live and work in that. So that's basically how I came to that. And it was like, it wasn't a quick thing. It took me a long time to come to that conclusion. It was kind of like, there was some sadness in that conclusion, to be honest with you. It wasn't like, wasn't happy. It was like
closing of a chapter, isn't it?
Like, yeah, and it's also like, fuck, really? I've got to leave to do this, really? Really?
That work.
Yeah, and then like, I mean, yeah, like, I mean,
no more driver, boy.
Yeah.
Work to like, you're working and enjoying. Now you got work to survive.
Yeah, especially at the beginning. I mean, you're not fully aware of that. People tell you like, if you start your own business, fuck man, be prepared. It's gonna be a slog for the first 5 years.
Corned beef sandwiches for the man, them.
Yeah,
trust.
Like they tell you that, and obviously I saw my boys from early on. You know, like. I saw it early on. Like when I first moved here, for example, the DP guys, I was more financially comfortable than those guys, for sure. Now, obviously, look at them now, it's completely different. So, but you're not fully aware. But it was definitely a sadness to realize I was going to have to leave. And I left when they offered me a new contract with a pay rise. And I was like, Nah, you don't get it, man, because it's not about money. It's like I've been asking for a position that would do X, Y, and Z for like the best part of 9 months now. And you were not getting any closer. And now your solution is Because my contract was due to end in 2 months. It was October, and my contract was due to end in December. And now their solution is to give me the promotion that I've been asking for a year and a half, and with a pay rise. And I was like, nah, it's not it, man. It's not it. So that's when I was like, I can't accept this because I'm going to leave at the end of my contract in December.
It's almost that thread again of being uncomfortable. Like you were offered more money, a promotion, so to speak, but the thing that interested you the most or that you gravitated towards the most was starting up your own venture, up your own thing. And I think that's been a consistent theme throughout the course of this conversation. Sure. That you're just like, you like being uncomfortable.
Yeah, I just like being on the edge. I've been on the edge because I feel like that's where you like achieve and grow.
I'm the same, bro. I'm exactly the
obviously,
same.
Obviously, like, I've been on the edge for a while now. So it's like, I want to like at some point get off the edge and just be comfortable, you know?
But do you though?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, probably not, but be a little bit more stable. You know, but it's okay. It's like 3 years in business. Like there's always, like when you're building, there's always like this phase. So, but yeah, I definitely like what you can achieve when you push yourself and put yourself out of your comfort zone and put yourself on the edge. I really like what you can get out of yourself when you do that to yourself, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like making yourself too comfortable is, it's not very sportsmanlike.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you never rest on your laurels. You're always trying to perfect something improve.
No, like, look, I mean, I always love putting sport and sport links to explain things, you know? And it's like, look at like the greatest, you know, Nadal and Federer and Messi and Ronaldo. Like, these guys are just relentless. Like, it's every single day until the end of their career, and then I guarantee you their career ends and they have that same approach and something else, you know? So it never stops, that constant 1% refinement, you know? And as you get better and closer to the pinnacle, you know, the 5%, the 10%, the 5% improvements turn into 3%, 2%, 1%, but they're always, even if it stays at 1%, they're still looking for that 1, that 0.5, that 0.25, you know? So it's like, yeah, I like that.
I do think, in addition to you, like, basically not wanting to rest on your laurels and get out of your comfort, I think that in addition to just having a certain confidence as well, because it's difficult to... It's one thing to have an idea or to not want to accept normally, but you need to also have the confidence to follow through with it. So I think that's super, super special. But then when you add... also another layer, which you spoke about in the beginning, which is, I think you've always had an idea of what your purpose was and you've had the confidence to try and chase and fulfill what that purpose is. You know, whether it's moving to another country twice, moving back to the Netherlands from Vietnam. And I think that's not something that should be sort of taken for granted, you know. And you're you know, we look at present day where you're running a company, you have a team around you. Like, you must sometimes look back when you was frolicking around on a scooter in Vietnam, or running around in Jimmy Woo in your early days and just thinking, rah, like, this is so mad, you know?
At the end of the day, like, what I'm doing now is for sure, like, what I dreamt I would be doing when I was like, okay, I'm going to leave and set something up. Nice. For sure, this is what I dreamt. But again, it evolves, man. Always it evolves. Like now, like within my company, it's changing. I'm changing the way that we run our company. You know, that's changing. And like the way that I set it up and started it is how I thought I wanted to set it up and start it. It's now changing. Yeah. And it's going to be slightly different for sure.
And you're working with some legendary brands like Raph Simmons, Rick Owens.
Not Rick.
Sorry. What do you call it? Stone Island. Alexander McQueen. And I think a nice touch is that I've also seen that you also work closely with Daily Paper and FP. Must be nice. Stuff, a whole full circle moment, isn't it?
That's nice.
I was reading the High Snob article about you and what you do. And the tagline was something along the lines of your favorite designer's secret weapon.
Yeah, I like that. That was cool. Yeah.
So as we begin to close off, how would you sort of describe what it is that you do for these brands that Kwame just mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it is like a behind the scenes creative studio, and we enable and drive like the creation of product basically for these brands. My analogy is like, it's like the Neptunes, you know, like in the early noughties, you know, when the Neptunes were just like making bangers, man, producing the biggest hits on the radio. That's kind of like how, that's my ambition, is to like Eretti to become this, you know, like behind the scenes, just like producing and creating like some great product that you see on the street and you recognize, you know, from these brands and whatnot. And we're the ones that are creating it behind the scenes. But it's not, yeah, you will never see like a Stone Island Eretti collab. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is behind the scenes. But also to be a catalyst for change in the industry. The industry is already changing and has been changing for a while. And we kind of came in at a good time for that change. There's a lot of independent creatives, independent studios now, which is wonderful to see. And yeah, the things we're working on now will just like further, like double down on that ambition to be the catalyst for change. Like, we started off with the purpose, of course, is like make it work. Like, just get it up, get it running, make it work. Obviously, then COVID hit, like, fuck, let's survive.
Shit, yeah, you know? That must have been scary.
That's wild. Like, 3 months, like 2 months after my first project released, which was Raph, January 2020, 3 months, COVID hits, begins. So, like, that happens. So, it's like, fuck it, make it work. Like, make it work, make it survive, you know? And you don't have the privilege anymore to, like, work on some of these more purposeful objectives that you have. Now we're at that stage where we can, and now it's about making it right, you know?
Wicked.
So that's what we're moving on to now, is, like, okay, we've gone through the make it work stage. I mean, we're still dealing with that, but as we look forward now, it's about make it right. So that's an exciting opportunity.
And you and your team will sit down with a brand, understand what they're trying to do, and then bring it to life, essentially,
right? Yeah.
From a footwear perspective now.
From a footwear perspective now. Yeah. And that's also an area where we're looking to improve and get better at as well. It's how we do that with more purpose. And how we do that in a way that it makes sense more. But yeah, we basically sit down with a brand, we receive a brief, and we ideate and we research, and we create concepts and we design all the way through to production.
Nice.
It's quite, I wouldn't say full circle, but very linked to what you was doing previously, right? You've got all your contacts, factories. Like, you've really made it work for you. Your jobs in the past work for you.
I mean, the reason why, like, we can offer the production part of the service is because of my 3 years in Vietnam. And that's what makes our studio quite unique, in the fact that we not only can, like, create ideas and design, we can also actually manufacture those ideas, you know, those products and those ideas, bring it to life, you know. And we have genuine knowledge in how to do that, you know.
It's so mad, bro.
So it's really, it's unique in that sense. I want to move out of footwear as well, so we're doing one footwear project starting now.
It's amazing that you've started with footwear, because I think a lot of people underestimate the fact that, you know, if us three tomorrow wanted to start a clothing brand, we could do it like that.
Yeah.
But footwear is so specific.
Yeah, footwear is mad hard, man. Footwear is crazy difficult. It's crazy. It's insane. Yeah.
A lot of these brands that you're probably sitting down with, they don't have the technical know-how.
Yeah.
They don't have the factory relationships to bring this to life. Like, footwear is, I think footwear, again, I'm going to use the word underestimated. It's such an underestimated SKU, because it's like, again, apparel you can do, easy money. Obviously, you have different levels of quality, and we couldn't reproduce an Izzy Miyagi pleated pant tomorrow.
Yeah.
But footwear is just like, it's an art almost. Yeah, it's an art. And I think that's just testament to the relationships you built and your technical know-how as well, man.
Thank you. It's a challenge for sure, but that's why we've been able to like have the start that we've had, you know, and go through this like make it work phase with the clients that we've had and grow. But if I look at our product portfolio now, where it was like a year and a half, like it's quite different. It's very different, and it's going to become more different as we move forward. It really, like, in this make it right phase, you know, that's what I call, like, this like, we're now in this phase of, like, making it right, make it make more sense, really get back to, like, this doing things with purpose.
Yeah.
We really need to get back to that.
Yes. I feel like that word we're going to hit, we've heard it so much, and it's something that just kind of like flows through you. Like you're a very purposeful man.
Yeah.
I had one question, which is almost from like a business perspective, where you've pivoted from being the creative, the one with the idea and having this vision, to now almost being like this creative director where you have to, you know, you spoke about earlier about your team and them buying into and adding on to your ideas. What is that pivot like? Because I can imagine someone who has the technical know-how and is super passionate that you might want to get involved all the time.
No, for sure. And it's like, I wouldn't call it a mistake, because it's like, it's natural, you know, when you start a business, it's your baby, you want to like, you want to manage all areas of it to make sure that it kind of grows how you want it to grow. But the first 2 years, I was involved with a lot of things. Now, like, I trust my design team, you know, to go and work. I don't want to be involved too much now in their part of what they do. You know, I need to be far less involved and have more of this director role and work on other areas of the business. So that's something now, like, the last few months, and again, it's part of this new transition we're going through into this Make It Right phase now. I'm less and less involved in the early stages of like researching and concepting. And then I get involved like into the concept to design phase and give an engineering point of view and give my creative engineering point of view. That's how I get, that's how I'm involved now. So yeah, at the beginning for sure I was involved. And now definitely like, I'm far less involved, but I don't want, to be honest with you, I don't want to be involved anyway.
Wow.
Like, it's cool, you know, and I really trust the team. It's fine. Like, you need to empower them and give them, like, like I said earlier, like, give them the ecosystem to thrive. And that's how I see my role in what they do. Just give them the tools to do what they need to do to the best of their ability. That's all I need to do. I don't need to, like, research with them and design with them, you know. I need to be involved from an engineering point perspective at the right time, but like, other than that, just what do you need to do what you need to do to the best of your ability, I'll provide it. That's my only job, you know.
It's been sick to break down the journey, and obviously we've been boys for a minute now, but I think the podcast, the thing that we love about the podcast, gives us an excuse to get to know our friends
on a deeper level.
I wanted to personally ask one last question.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you have anything else, Kwams, but I wanted to ask, like, you've always kind of like been on the edge of wanting to see what's next and how can you continue to develop and come out of your comfort zone without obviously giving too much information away on the direction of the company, whatever. What do you think that mindset is going to do, and where is it going to take you next?
I mean, I've learned so much these last 3 years. So fucking much, you know? So, like, definitely, like, our balance, our product portfolio balance will shift, allowing us, again, to do things with more purpose, take more time to do things, because the hunger to grow and the hunger to take on projects and succeed at times is, like, you know, like, so, the phrase, like, you're bitten off more than you can chew. We've definitely had that a few over the last 3 years when you throw COVID into the mix as well. And we've always been a very small team.
Factory delays, all of that.
Factory delays, not being able to visit Asia, this kind of thing. So, yeah, product portfolio, so, like, balance, like, better balance, so that allows us to do our projects with more intent, go deeper, be more purposeful. And then, yeah, step outside of footwear, man. We're definitely going to be stepping outside of footwear. We're going to be, stepping into other product avenues and working with brands and individuals. That's a little hint for something that's to come.
One person in this world.
in new ways that allow us just to do our job better, you know, for sure.
Yeah. No, that's dope. Miles, this is always funny for me because, like, obviously the guys knew you a little bit better, so I'm more on the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a great way to understand your story. I'm sure you are, but you should really be proud of yourself, man. Like,
it's a
great story. I think this is going to have a lot of worldwide resonation in terms of believing in yourself. And I was going to say, like, you were obviously doing, like, 10 toes in Saigon. Because a lot of people are putting their 10 toes in some of your, your fantabulous and, like, futuristic designs. And I have one last thing. Shout out to your lecturer and those shin pads in it.
Trust me.
But no, I'm going to... Yeah, I'm going to do what I do. So you have listened to the Out of Home podcast with your guys, Yaf, Kwams, Key and Steven. It's love every time. We have the very special guest, Miles O'Mealy, in the house. And yeah, catch you on the rebound, people.
Peace.
Yo, thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.